Welcome to the Investor Mama Podcast, Money Conversations with a Mom's Touch. Your host, Jen Narciso, interviews amazing guests each week to help you become educated, be inspired by other money stories, and stay motivated on your own wealth-building journey. No matter where you are financially, whether you're in debt or financially free, this podcast is for you. Now sit back and enjoy.
Welcome back to the Investor Mama Podcast, Money Conversations with a Mom's Touch. I'm your host, Jen Narciso. Happy Thursday, everyone. Welcome to the show. I am so happy to interview this week Sarah Wilson from Budget Girl. We have an amazing episode ahead on short-term rentals, but not just the normal short-term rentals that you may be thinking of, but she has some amazing ideas, and what she's doing right now is awesome. So I'm super excited for you here. But before we dive in, I wanted to let you know that I did do my first Mama Talks, Money Conversations with a Mom's Touch. It was our first Instagram Live, and I had the pleasure of interviewing Chelsea Brennan from Smart Money Mamas. Definitely go onto Instagram and check it out. Chelsea talked about, this was so awesome, I actually have to go back myself and listen, but Chelsea talked about how she is teaching her kids about money from a young age, very specific details on how to start paying them, or I should say not paying them, but helping them to manage money and teaching them the value of money and excited of savings and all the things that's very age appropriate. She goes through all the steps. It is amazing. And so I was really pumped about that. We're going to be doing more of these live Instagrams, so definitely stay tuned. And now jumping to today's episode, I'm really excited to bring Sarah in. She's got amazing content also on Instagram. I'll definitely put links to in the show notes. But without further ado, Sarah, welcome to the show. How are you doing today?
I'm good. Thank you so much for having me.
So before we dive into today's topic, which is short-term rentals, I would love for you to start off with, what is your money story?
Of course. So almost 8 years ago now, I got laid off from my job, which was a newspaper reporter making $24,000 a year. And I also had $33,000 in student loan debt that I hadn't been paying on because the government said I didn't have to. So laid off on unemployment, terrified, no financial, familial support, anything like that. And I thought I was going to have to waitress with a college degree to survive.
Wow.
Got real mad about that and decided that as soon as I got a new job, I would figure this money thing out. I would pay off my debt. And so I spent the next 3 years doing just that. I moved to a new town, got a job making $26,000 a year, started side hustling, learned to budget, taught myself kind of everything that I needed to know slowly and terribly at first. Try again. And I paid off $10,000 that year. And then I paid off $10,000 the next year and the next. And in 3 years and 3 months, I paid off all 33 grand of that debt. I saved up an emergency fund, started investing, got a couple of better paying jobs. And now I have an over $200,000 net worth and have no debt other than my duplex, which I pay no money to live in. I actually make money off of. And I recently launched a short-term rental. So I am a poster child for the, if I can do it on a low income single, you can too. And I love talking about it and money and people who are trying to get better with money.
That is amazing. I have to ask though, going back, what was going through your mind when you had all that debt and you were just clawing your way out and doing all the things? What was your mindset at that point, if you remember?
It was fear and rage, pretty much. I was not thrilled with my situation, but I knew that I was the only one that could do anything about it. And once I actually started really working on the money part of it, I taught myself how to meal plan. I taught myself how to shop better, save money here, there, make a little bit more money here and there. I kind of gamified it. And I cut all of my hobbies that cost me money and I traded them for hobbies that made me money. And I just tried to challenge myself every day, week, and month to get just a little bit better and make a little bit more money, pay off a little bit more debt. And it steamrolled. And honestly, being in that really scorched earth mindset and having this huge goal that I was chipping away at and could see my progress on was motivating. It was a much better mindset than when I was laid off and had all this debt and didn't have a job. And that's terrifying. But once I was in it, it was awesome, actually. it was really fun to challenge myself, see how much better I could do the next month.
Which is amazing. And I'd love for you just to share quickly, what were some of the ways that you cut expenses? We could start there first.
Absolutely. So the first thing I did was I made a budget, and I didn't really understand, you know, my moniker is budget girl. So that goes well. I didn't really know what I was spending at the time. I was completely naive to things like shopping seasonally and on sale. I just kind of went to the grocery store a couple of times a week and bought what looked good. I didn't meal prep. So every day around lunch and when I got hangry at work, I had to go out and like buy some food or just starve. And I didn't really understand how to set myself up for success in those ways. And I was kind of fresh out of college. I didn't really have those skills taught to me. And I had to teach them to myself, which was challenging, but important. And now I still use those same skills, those same habits that I started back then to build myself a life and money habits that have made me very successful.
That's amazing. And I know we could go down all these in much more detail, but I don't want to go too much because I know that's not what the main theme of today is. But you said you gamified it and you figured out ways to create more income. What were some of the strategies you use, especially if you're busy, you're doing all the things and you're working full time? And well, at the time you were on unemployment, but well, let me ask you, did you get a job recently after that? Or how did it, I guess that transition?
That's when I started my money journey, was I got a job in Hammond, Louisiana, making $26,000 a year.
So big bucks.
Yeah, big bucks. Pre-tax at a newspaper. I was doing the dreg work. I got as much overtime as I could. I picked up additional jobs. I did some secret shopping, which was really fun because that all fed me and it paid me money. I worked nights doing pizza delivery. I picked up any extra hours that I could. I did some dog training. There was nothing I wasn't willing to do this side of legal to make an extra buck. And I made it into what I did on my nights and weekends.
And it also sounds like you figured out a way to hack your major expenses, which is the housing and the food and the cars and stuff. So could you talk a little bit more about that?
Sure. So the house hacking came recently. At the time, I lived in a very cheap apartment, but I did figure out how to manage my food costs, which is one of the biggest things for every single American. And probably beyond that is food costs so much money and so much food.
I am guilty. Very guilty.
And so I started meal planning. I started meal prepping. I shopped sales. I shopped salvage stores. If you've ever heard of those, there was one in Louisiana where they sell close to or just past expired foods or overstock from grocery markets. And you can save a ton of money if you're willing to shop salvage stores, day old bread stores, scratch and dent can stores. I never got sick either, which is a big concern, but I never ever got sick from it. And I eat a little bit more healthfully now, but at the time it was something that really made a difference in my grocery budget. So there was that. I brought my lunch to work every single day for 3 years. And I would meal prep for a week. I'd make a lasagna and take a little bit each day. I would meal prep at night. And then for car expenses, at the time I was driving absolute clunker and just kind of making sure it survived a little bit. And then I bought when that one died, I bought another car in cash. I had saved up a sinking fund because I knew that car wasn't going to last forever and I didn't want to go into more debt. So I bought another car in cash, and now I buy salvage cars, even though I could afford to buy new or gently used, because it saves a ton of money. And I also, you mentioned the house hacking. That's only happened in the last couple of years, but I bought a duplex once I had saved up enough for down payment and was in a good financial place with emergency funds and house emergency funds, because those happen. And I rent out one side and I rent out part of my side as well. And I make $150 a month over all of my housing expenses every month. So I live for free and I make money off of my house.
Which is amazing. And I love that you said this is stuff that you can do, but you don't have to do it forever. I mean, you could choose to do it forever, but then you made the decision to get the type of cars you get, but you don't have to. That's what I love about once you get your money house in order and once you get it right, the flexibility and the freedom and the peace of mind. You can move now and go to another home if you want and make even more money that could then pay off the next one. It just snowballs. Once you start getting into the right habits, it's awesome to see where it takes you.
And I drive the nicest car I've ever driven. It has clicky locks. It has windows that work. It has air conditioning. These are all things that the car I drove when I was paying off debt did not have. So I'm thrilled with it. It's got a backup camera and I paid $5,000 for it as a salvage vehicle. It's a 2018 Nissan Versa Note. It's a hatchback. I've brought tons of stuff home in it, including multiple doors and cabinets and bookcases. I couldn't want for anything more from it. And I $5,000 cash.
That's amazing. Yeah. And now you have a nest egg. You have your now negative net worth to such a nice, solid, strong, positive net worth in not many years, which is very impressive. So congratulations to you.
And not making much money. This past year, I did make $100,000, which is huge. And I could never have conceived that before. But the majority of that was actually from my side business, Budget Girl. So I now make about $50,000 a year at my day job. And I save and invest 40% of my income.
Which is amazing. When people ask me about money all the time, I say it kind of does not matter at all what you make. The only thing that matters is what your savings rate. Yeah, that's your path to freedom. Is so if you make $300,000, but your savings rate is zero, you're just as poor as someone who makes $30,000 and zero savings rate. It doesn't matter.
Yeah. I figured out very early that I could live on very little. And so every time I had the lifestyle upgrade or a level up, I took most of that raise or I took most of that windfall and saved it and invested it and made it make me more money and have kept my living expenses fairly low. And then I bought my house and now my living expenses are practically nil.
Yeah.
So I have my car insurance, gas, electricity, and other basic internet bills and food. And that's it. So I actually live on very little and I'm able to use the rest to make myself money and save and prepare for my future, which is amazing coming from a place at the beginning where I was so scared that I wouldn't have enough money to pay my rent.
Yeah, no, for sure. And I know for those of you listening, you may say, oh, she lives in a low cost living area, or even though she didn't make a lot of money, she didn't have to spend a lot of money, but that's not what I hope you take away from it. I hope you just take away that no matter what your situation is, you can figure out a way. You may have to hustle and work really hard, but it's temporary and you can do anything temporary. And the what you're sacrificing, though, you get so much more out of it. I can't tell you how much peace of mind is worth.
It's going to sound really weird, but I kind of miss being in that place where I was hustling so hard to pay off debt because I have never felt more accomplished in my life. It was working really hard for really high rewards. Now, I'm not saying I'm going to get back into debt and go back to that. But the 3 years that I spent hustling my way out of debt, I look back on very fondly. I don't see it as a time of super restriction or of telling myself no constantly. I think of it as a time where I grew immensely as a person over just a very short period of time. And it kind of set me up for being highly successful in the following decades. I kind of feel like since we were talking about gamification, I kind of feel like I cheat coded the game and was able to blast forward a bunch. So if I was still on the government repayment of my student loans, I would still have 7 years left on them.
Yeah. Yeah.
Whereas now I have none and I was able to then move forward financially into real estate investing and regular investing. And it's been fantastic.
Yeah, well, I'm excited for today. We're going to talk about short-term rental because that's right where my husband and I are. Okay, this is the next step for us because we've already we love the house hacking strategy. Think it's amazing. And we had two houses and then we just this past year during COVID bought our family home now. We were going to do a live and flip, but we actually just love the location and we can't sell it. So we're just going to take a HELOC out and our plan is to do short-term rental. But I will say just from starting, I'm very nervous doing a short-term rental, especially we were thinking out of state because our area is just so crazy right now. But I've heard the horror stories where the short-term rentals were destroyed and all the things. So before we go into more of the specifics, what made you decide to even start with short-term rentals?
The low cost to entry, especially doing a unique stay like I've done. So I bought a 1984 Holiday Rambler travel trailer. So, and then in Arkansas, brought it down here and then renovated it. So it's already a tiny piece. It's a tiny home, essentially, that I could move and put wherever I want to. And eventually I plan to get some land and put it on there permanently. But I bought a home for $4,200. Joke. And then it cost me about $10,000-$12,000 extra dollars to renovate it, fix it up, outfit it as an Airbnb. And now I have this additional place to stay, this additional home that I can move wherever I want for about $15,000 all in. I own it cash. I love that if I were to put it into a neighborhood that I then no longer wanted it in, I could move it.
Right, you can make beachfront ocean property.
Yeah, I could. I could at this point sell it as a Airbnb in a box to someone and make a profit. I'm not going to because I love it. I put my heart and soul into it. It took me 4 months to renovate it, but I really enjoyed it. I enjoyed doing all of the DIY and making it really cute and homey. And it's such a lovely place to stay. So I understand that's not everyone's Airbnb experience, but I wanted to get in with something that I could pay for in cash that had some flexibility. And I really like unique stays. I would love to own a yurt or a glamping dome or a little A-frame or a little barn dominium. That's what I like to stay in when I travel. So of course, that's what I wanted to invest in here. And you can do it at a very low cost if you're willing to do something unique or weird like that. With a home, it's going to cost you what it's going to cost you to outfit it for Airbnb. But that can be so highly profitable. Most Airbnbs are just homes. But the reason I wanted to get into it was because I knew I could get in cheap, own that outright, and then probably make my entire investment back in a couple of years and be profitable.
So how did you find this?
Well, the idea, just because I've been staying in unique stays on Airbnb for years. So I love going to, I've stayed in an Airstream before, I've stayed in an A-frame, various stuff. And I'm just always kind of looking out on Facebook Marketplace for schoolies and all sorts of weird little tiny houses.
Can you explain what an A-frame is and stream all the different types of houses that you just talked about?
Of course. So an A-frame is a very small, kind of cheap to build cabin that is mostly roof. And it's two pieces of roof stuck together, the letter A. And then it's kind of a small home with slanted walls inside. And those have been built all over because they're very cheap to build. You don't need as many materials. It's mostly roof. And they're really cool places to stay. Airstreams are those canned ham, little mirrored finish campers that you see driving down the road, or sometimes those are really, really cool kind of higher end travel trailers or campers. I love those. A schoolie is an old school bus that's been converted into a home. So people do all sorts of crazy things, figuring out ways to build homes cheaper and have really cool places to stay if they can't afford necessarily traditional housing. People are just endlessly creative, which is the coolest thing ever. So I've always been interested in all of those types of vehicles and little unique tiny homes. And obviously the cost entry is lower on those.
Much lower than a normal home.
And as someone who's coming from a traditionally low income, that's very appealing to me. So, I mean, I've had a Pinterest board of Shasta old Airstream or old Shasta campers since I was in college. I've always been interested, and I just have looked for them on Marketplace over the years. And I saw this one. It was $4,200. It was partially renovated already. They had already gutted the whole thing, re-insulated, re-walled, and they just kind of ran out of steam on it. And it just needed someone to go in and finish it. So I finished out the living room, the bedroom, got the electrical fixed up, painted the whole thing myself, made it cute. And now it's a Airbnb called the Ag Wagon.
That's amazing. I love that you thought of it. You just blew my mind so much because we're like, just the concept of it, what it could be. I've had this mental vision of what an Airbnb, and we're thinking maybe doing something in Orlando for Disney for the kids. And I was looking online and all these crazy Disney themes. There's the Frozen house and all this. And I'm like, I don't want to spend that money though, but it's so much. I mean, just for the house, forget the house and all the other stuff that you have to put into it to make it cool, but you can just make it cool by being cool. If that makes sense. Yeah. I love this idea. Anyone can do it.
Also, almost all of the decor and stuff that was in, that I put in the Ag Wagon was thrifted. So it's Texas/Texas A&M theme. So I live in College Station, Texas, and that's where the camper is. And we're the Aggies, hence the Ag Wagon. And over the last 6-8 months, I've been collecting vintage Aggie memorabilia and paraphernalia and games. So I've got Aggie Monopoly, Aggie Checkers, And I put all these cool little vintage touches in there that's going to really attract the market that wants to come here.
Yeah. 100%. It's all this business one-on-one. It's amazing.
Yeah, so I'm booked out for parents' weekend graduation. As soon as I open up the dates, I guarantee you I'll be booked up for game days. And it's, you don't have to be an Aggie fan to stay there. But I took a theme that was local to the area, like your Disney Frozen house. And then I thrifted most of the stuff for it.
I love that. And if it's okay, I would love to put a picture of your.
I will send you so many pictures in the listing. I love it. And I'm honestly very proud of it. I had a vision for it and it really came to life. And it didn't cost that much money. I realized that, you know, $15,000 is not chump change. I used to make $1,600 a month, but $15,000 for an entire home.
Yeah.
That I can then rent out and make money off of.
And you could just use it yourself to travel.
I can. I've stayed in it. It's so much fun. I can't wait for friends to visit me and come stay in it too.
How big is it? How many people can it sleep?
It's 200 square feet. So ideally two people, maximum of three, three would be a little bit of a stretch, but it's kind of an experience too. You know, people love trying out tiny living. I have a 3-bedroom, 1200 square foot house that is filled with stuff and people and dogs, but I also love kind of the escape of going to a much simpler, more kind of cozy spot. And that's what it is, which is great. And I like vacationing in places like that too.
Amazing. So how did you find the specific wagon? How'd you actually get the home?
it was on Facebook Marketplace and someone had listed it for sale, $4,200 in Searcy, Arkansas. I saw the pictures. I asked a few questions and then put down a non-refundable $500 deposit, which scared me because I've gone and looked at vintage campers before and I've gotten there and they weren't what they were said to be. Mm-hmm. I went toward an Avion Airstream a few months back and the photos that they posted were very old. And I got in there and there was rat droppings everywhere and there were fleas and it smelled and it was rotting. And I was like, and we're done.
Yeah.
Just because it wasn't what they said it was going to be. So I put down this deposit, rented a truck, and that weekend drove 8 hours to Arkansas, got it, brought it back, put it in a field near my house and spent the next 4 months fixing it up.
Okay. So I would love to talk about logistics too. What do you look for in one of these type of homes when you're purchasing it?
So every single RV, travel trailer, camper, or mobile home that you see for sale is going to say that it has no leaks and it's going to have leaks. So the first thing you're going to have to do is find the leaks, patch the holes, figure out if you need to pull out any wood or insulation or anything like that. I was pretty fortunate in that the camper that I bought, they had already done that, but even it had leaks. They had already sealed everything. It still had leaks. So we had to do a top coat on the roof. I don't know anything about travel trailers. I didn't know anything about them longer than 4 months ago. I learned as I went. So I hired a local handyman who knew a little bit about RVs and he was able to tell me the things to look for. There's this stuff called screw covers, which is essentially the seals that you put on where the metal meets.
Okay.
And I couldn't figure out Googling what those were called. And I needed someone who knew what they were called to tell me what to search for. They were called screw covers. I never would have figured that out.
Yeah.
I knew I could figure out how to paint the thing myself, which I saved a lot of money that way, but I bought straight to metal paint and did a lot of work on that. I figured out how to frame out the windows myself. And then I hired out what I couldn't handle.
And that's awesome.
Yeah. And you learn as you go. I tend to take on big projects and I get really stressed in the middle of them. But you know what? Every time I come out the other side, I know more and I'm more prepared for the next one. So same with the duplex here, renovating my side before I moved in, I learned a lot of stuff that then when I had a turnover on the other side, I was able to, it was so much easier because every time you work on something, every time you take on a big project, you learn things, you have to. And that's one of the best things. And I'm a big DIYer, so I don't hire out everything. I like to learn how to do it myself and do it right because I just like to know.
No, I love it. And well, did you research too, if with your state, if you could get one of these campers and where you could put it to do the work? Because I know where we are, I actually don't know for sure. I'd have to do research from the towns where you could actually keep them and the rules and regulations and then renting it out. And Did you have to do all that, the permits and all the fun stuff?
So I did the research on short-term rentals and where they were allowed and if we needed permits. So in College Station, the main city, you have to go through a permitting process. You have to have inspections. You have to pay annually. You have to pay an 8% per hotel tax. But in the unincorporated area of the city and in Bryan, which is next door to College Station, none of those restrictions exist. So I knew all of that stuff and I did all my due diligence. What I did not do, and I don't even know how I would have searched this, is remember that field near my house that I mentioned?
Yeah, that's what I was like, how did you just put a camera in a field like that someone come out your door?
So I asked the people who were renting the house that the field was attached to, hey, can I pay you $100 a month to leave this here for a couple of months? And they were like, yeah, that sounds great. And then I just ran an electric cord to another neighbor's house who kindly agreed to let me do that. And then about 2 months later, the city stopped by and they were like, hey, you're not allowed to have this here because it was on grass. I would be allowed to have it if it was on concrete. And I was just like, just give me a couple more weeks and I swear I'll get it out of here. And they were like, okay.
Yeah,
I got it out of there. I don't know if I would have faced any fines or anything, probably. But I think the lady was very nice. She could also tell that work was being done on it. I hadn't parked a camper there to just let it rot and be a public eyesore. She could see that it was getting fixed up and it was becoming beautiful. At first, it was a total eyesore. It was just this rusted tin pan with duct tape on it, and it was half painted, half not. So I understand the concern. My poor neighbors, probably, I was not their favorite at first, but they had to look at it while it was ugly. But they, everyone was very kind. And I guess I kind of got lucky there. And now I know for the next camper reno, I have to put it on concrete. So I'm going to have to find somewhere else to park it because my duplex doesn't have enough land to park.
And I'm just thinking at our house, if we were to do something like this, we could put it in our backyard, but I don't even know how we'd get it through the gate.
I've done some calculations to try to figure out how I could stick one somewhere on my actual property. But yeah, currently the camper is at a local RV park. So it's all hooked up there, all nice. And I pay a monthly lot rent, which I'm very lucky right now. The amount of rent that I'm getting from my Airbnb guests is surpassing what the lot rent is. The plan is to eventually buy some land, put the sewage and water hookups and everything like that, get all of those installed, pour maybe a pad, do a deck around it, a little roof over it, and make it a permanent little stay. Sure. That's very cute.
That's awesome. Well, so for something like this, how much rent can you even get on average, let's say per night?
Right now it's at $100 a night.
Oh, wow. Okay. So you're making really good money.
Yeah. And right now I'm mostly only booking out on weekends, but I'll be able to charge more for, things like graduation, for parents weekend. And right now it's the off season in Texas. So where I'll really make my money is football games. Mm-hmm. So I don't know how much you know about Texas, but we love
our football. Yeah.
And specifically Texas A&M Aggie fans are pretty rabid, and you can charge easily $250 to $300 a night for home football games. So that is where the Ag Wagon will really make me my money back.
Well, think about it. You put your 15 grand all in. What other expenses do you have to think about? The
lot rent, including electricity, water, sewer, and internet is about $475 a month.
That's still cheap.
I need 5 nights to break even / make a profit, assuming that I don't need to restock anything major or have my RV tech come out and do anything. So it's the sunk cost is there, but I cash flowed it and I had the savings and I can just start making money back now.
Wow. And then from the time it took you to fix it all up and get it good, how quickly were you able to find vacationers to use it? Or was there a gap period that you kind of had to cover?
I put the Ag Wagon up in the middle of December, and within 3 days I had a booking.
Oh, okay.
And I booked out essentially the next week. I booked out Christmas, I booked out New Year's, and I booked out most of the first week of January very quickly. And I keep getting worried that I'm not going to get more bookings, and then I get more bookings.
Yeah. Well, it's so unique. It's such a...
Yeah. There's no real... I mean, there are a few other RVs, which is the classification Airbnb uses for this in my area, but mine's the only vintage one and mine's the only one that's themed. So it's actually gotten The others are just kind of the big white RVs with the writing on them. So there's some, I think there's some character there that is attractive to people.
Oh, yeah. No, if I were coming to a Texas game and I saw it, that'd be cool to try. Like, would it? And then now you got my like wheels turning. We do something mm-hmm. like this in our area because we do not live where there's a lot of mobile homes and things like that. So I don't know how, but it just, I love that it was a cheap startup. You had an idea and you just figure out a way and now you're cash flowing. And I think just wait. I really believe that you're going to be making a lot more money than you think once it gets more name recognition and gets more guests and stuff.
I hope so. Everyone who stayed so far has left me a 5 stars. They've loved it. I've had some really great feedback. I try to make it a really special my stay. I leave a little Instax camera filled with film so you can, and it's vintage style too. So you can like take pictures and have an instant souvenir of your stay. And I think I stock it with tons of amenities and snacks. And I think those little things just help people feel at home in the area. Yeah. I have a really great guest guide that has all sorts of recommendations on foods and things to do. And, you know, this is my town, so I know it.
Yeah. And how long did it take you to actually fix it up and then get it going? I know it took you about only like a couple of days once you were really ready.
Just a little bit less than 4 months.
Okay.
From purchasing it to listing it on Airbnb.
Which isn't too bad at all. Wow. That's amazing. And I love all the little details that you did that were cost effective, but that are going to make yours... Well, what other things actually, for someone who's thinking of Airbnb, what other tips can you share or things that creatively you thought of do it yourself that people have really found enjoyable?
So tons of blankets. I want it to be as cozy as possible. I have a smart TV. I have books that are local to Texas. I've got the vintage games that I mentioned. I stock local coffee that people love. I stock a Texas pecan that's sold at our local HEB that's just really aromatic and yummy. I do a lot of little snacks, and those are just Dollar Tree and Walmart little prepackaged snacks. But you know, you get to an Airbnb after you've been traveling, you're ravenously hungry. I put many water bottles in the fridge. I usually leave a bottle of sparkling cider, like the Welch's.
Yeah.
A nice treat. Yeah. You know, I don't want to leave alcohol just in case anyone has any issues with it. And I don't want to double check for IDs or anything. And I leave fuzzy socks because camper floors get cold.
Nice. Yeah. That's awesome. I love it. You're self-managing everything, right?
Yes. I actually just hired a cleaner to come in after me. I wanted to make sure I got all the systems down myself first, just to make sure everything ran the way I wanted it to. And then I didn't need to add or subtract anything. And I just hired a cleaner who's been coming in and cleaning after guests. She's been great. And I don't mind losing the cleaning fee because then I don't have to spend my Saturday or Sunday night doing that. So that's great. It's becoming slightly more passive now. And I just get to check the bookings, accept people in, and then alert the cleaner that someone's coming. So it's been really fantastic.
That's awesome. And are you the one actually stocking stuff or does she go out and get it for you?
I've been stocking and right now there's enough in there for the next 3 months. So it's kind of a...
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Semi-regular thing. I have an owner's closet in the camper that locks. And so everything that she needs is in there.
And she just puts it out, all the stuff.
Okay. And she does the laundry and everything too. So it's another reason I wanted to kind of do the first couple months of cleaning myself, just so I would kind of figure out all the processes.
That's amazing. And so what's your check-in process? Do you have one?
There's a lockbox on the outside of the camper. I give people the code. They check themselves in. Check themselves out. I have a security camera, which I can monitor from my phone at any time. And I get little alerts when people show up and when they leave, essentially anytime the camera is fired. I don't usually keep the alerts on, but I can go check it and make sure everybody's doing okay.
So have you had any horror stories yet of anyone trashing it or anything?
No, thankfully everyone's been super respectful. Good. I will say that I had a last minute service animal. That was my very first booking and I got terrified because it's a no pets rental. It's a very small space. I love my animals, but I also know how destructive animals can be.
Yeah.
And if I put my dog in a 200 square foot metal box with all these noises, because it is at an RV park, I would not blame, and then left in a strange place, I would not blame her if she tore stuff up. So that's kind of the mindset I was going into it. So it's a no pets rental. But of course, we want to be ADA compliant and accept service animals because you have to. But I think it's not a secret that a lot of people have service animals.
Yeah, that are not really service animals.
Are not trained.
Let's call it out. That too. So
my very first guest, I booked her. She seemed great. And then the night before, she's like, oh yeah, we have a service animal. I can't do anything.
Yeah.
At that point. But it turns out it was actually a very well-trained animal. I believe it was a service animal. I had to do a couple extra hours of cleaning because dog hair just gets everywhere.
Yeah.
And one of the things about having a no pets rental is if you check in and there's dog dander and you're allergic, that's a whole nother problem. So I had to do a lot more deep cleaning, but they were fine. They're great. But yeah, that was my very first booking. My very first booking.
Well, prepared you for the worst. I'm very glad
it was a good animal.
No, that's great. What about anything else system-wise that you could recommend for someone who's thinking of getting into this venture?
So you'll need multiple sets of bedding. So I have three full sets that include the topper quilt, a fleece blanket in case it's cold, sheet sets, blankets, towels, et cetera. And I try to have four towels for each set of guests. So that's a lot of towels. So at first I was thinking I might only need two, and it just, you're going to need more and they're going to get ruined eventually anyway. It's just part of the business. I haven't had that happen yet, but I know it's going to. So having more stock for the turnable items than you think you need is probably a really good idea. I figured out very quickly after my first guest that I didn't have enough towels. So I very quickly ordered some. A cleaning checklist is a great idea. And staying in it yourself. Before I let anybody book it, my boyfriend Jacob and I stayed in it with our dog Maggie, because she's the exception to the no pets rule. And we cooked there. We stayed the night. I showered. I figured out that one of the little pumps of shower goop
didn't work.
The pump didn't work. And you're just kind of figuring out all the systems and how to make it as easy as possible by staying in it yourself was illuminating.
Also, yeah, that's such a great tip. And I usually don't hear that, but it makes so much sense.
Yeah, I was not going to let anyone else stay in it first either. My baby.
Yeah. No, for sure. For sure. And have you ever had an issue where someone you need to hire, you had a handyman or someone come out quickly? There was actually an issue or something like that?
Yeah, I had I mentioned the campers from 1984. So it's winter. Things are freezing up. I had an issue with one guest recently where she couldn't get the door to lock. Something had happened in the locking mechanism, this, 30-year-old locking mechanism, and she could get in and out. The handle worked, but she couldn't get it to lock. So I went out there really quickly, and she was super nice about it too. She's like, no, I understand. It's fine. She could still lock herself in with a latch on the inside, but leaving, she couldn't lock the camper, secure it, which of course I understand. So when she had to leave before I could get over there, I was monitoring the camera for her, making sure nobody, I told the RV manager of the campground, like, hey, can you keep an eye out for the next couple of hours? This is happening. She was more than kind enough to do that. Everybody was very wonderful and very safe, but I had to get a locksmith out there who had to take the lock apart and find this little baby ball bearing that had fallen out of place because it had frozen.
Oh, wow.
Jiggled out of place. So we had to put that back, get the lock all resecured. And then it happened again. Went out there once I'd already paid over $100 for the locksmith, but I washed him so I could take it apart and put it back together now. And we used some silicone spray, and that actually seemed to make it work better because the WD-40 that I had used doesn't do well in low temperatures. So you learn every single time, and I'll probably be replacing the lock with a newer kit soon, just so that never, ever happens again. We haven't had an issue since. That was a couple of weeks ago, but just to be safe, I'll probably switch that out in the future between guests.
And how far are you just actually geographically from the camper?
Oh, it's a couple of miles.
Oh, so it's
halfway between where I live and where I work. So I can go there from either place. I can get there really, really fast, which was important to me. I know a lot of people have had so much success with out of town, out of state rentals, short term, long term, but I never want to be in a position where I can't go help my guests. I feel such an obligation to them. They've trusted me with a safe place to stay. And I'm a local investor person, I think. I know my area.
It's good.
I love my area. I like knowing that my renter is okay and I can get to her if I need it.
Yeah.
So maybe eventually, as I'm less of a baby investor, I'll be able to release and trust property managers and stuff like that more. But for right now, I enjoy doing it myself and I'm very hands-on.
No, that's awesome. Well, how much time do you think you spend managing it?
I don't know. I mean, it takes less than probably an hour total between the time that somebody books for me to get them all set up, get verified, send the, do the cleaner, all, and, you know, essentially send out all the emails that make the listing happen, communicate with them to them checking in. And then I just send an email when they check in and when they're going to check out and have my phone on me. If they email me, my phone buzzes. So it's not bad, honestly. Yeah. It's not like I'm having to be there constantly. They have emergency numbers and the guide shows how to do everything in the camper. So I haven't had anyone be like, hey, how do you do this? And I send them the guide beforehand in a PDF. So if they want to scroll it, I've set up some systems to where it's very minimal work on my part that I have to do. And now that I have a cleaner, it's practically just doing a couple of emails and booking off the calendar.
Yeah. So are you the emergency or did you put someone else in place? So if there is one that they call them.
No, that's me.
So you're the emergency. Okay. So essentially what you're doing is, so you're the one listing it. So you're the one, the intake, you have your standard, I'm assuming your standard emails, you have it kicks off once they do it, you kick off to your cleaner and then you send them the instructions on how to get to the place. And then you send another email as their booking gets closer.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And then the access information. And then once they get there, I have an email that I send and all of these are copy paste at the point. I personalize them, but I already have scripts.
Okay.
Set up saying like, hey, so glad you've gotten in. If you need anything, let me know, et cetera. And then here's the checkout information. It's also in this book. And then once they check out, I just kind of check the security camera on my phone and I text the cleaner. And actually usually I try not to do same day turnovers. So my cleaner usually comes the next day anyway. So
yeah.
Yeah.
That's awesome. And you're also, you mentioned earlier that you're doing mostly weekends anyway. So you have some time. It's not like you're on the go flipping and switching.
But that is why I wanted to hire a cleaner just in case I had a midweek turnover that I didn't have time to do or something to that effect.
Yeah. And how did you find your cleaner? Is she part of a big company or she's small local?
No, she's a personal. I put a ask out in a local Bryan College Station small business owners group that I'm in locally because I want to support people that are also in my area.
Yeah. And small businesses. Yeah.
And I got quotes from a couple of people. I chose one to come out and check out the camper. We clicked right away. She was awesome. Gave me a bunch of advice because I don't clean for a living. It was never going to be a good long-term idea for me to do that.
Yeah.
While we were touring around the camper, she was just like, I'd probably want to add to the checklist to dust off this light. And I look up and I'm like, I forgot there was a light there. And on it. So leave it to the professionals sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then I message her / email her and she's good to go. We did a test clean and I was extremely happy with it. So have that. And eventually I may get a second person just in case the first person is not available, but that is a future Sarah problem. Right now I am the second person.
Nice. Awesome.
The first person is not available.
So if you were to hire out another component, what would be the next thing you'd hire out?
See, I have nothing against property managers. Nothing. I know a lot of amazing real estate investors locally that love and rely on property managers, but I just like knowing what the problems are myself and finding solutions. That's kind of the fun entrepreneurship bit to me. So yeah. I don't think I want to hire out property managers. I want to do it myself, unless maybe I go on vacation or something. So if I could find someone to be the property manager, if I want to leave for a week.
Yeah. Just to have a backup or something.
Maybe it's a backup.
Which you could probably hire a virtual assistant.
Probably. Yeah. Yeah. That's it. I like doing it myself. The plan is to buy some property, ideally with some other type of little unique structure on it. Move the camper there and have kind of multiple Airbnbs / vacation rentals on the same little lot that are each themed and adorable and fun and unique that could be rented out either together or separately.
I love it. I love it. So, well, before we jump into our lightning round, is there any other tips or things you could think of for somebody who wants to go the short-term rental route?
There are a ton of resources and people that are sharing and incredibly open with what they have learned over doing this a lot on YouTube. RoBuilt is a fantastic channel, and he has a ton of resources and knowledge. And the reason that I do the amenities, originally I was going to have it very sparse, just like shampoo, conditioner, body wash, and some soap in the bathroom. And then I watched a bunch of YouTube videos that were like, it's even if someone completely clears you out of every little amenity you've left, if you want to leave, I mean, obviously you're going to leave a first aid kit, but if you want to leave toothpaste and makeup wipes and floss and all these other things, even if someone completely clears you out, you can probably restock for $20. And the amount that that's going to mean to the guests who come in and have forgotten a razor or have forgotten a hair tie or a brush or something like that, and that it's there for them, it's going to mean so much more to them cost per use. So watching videos that convinced me to change how I was planning on doing it. And I think for the better, because I've had people mention in my reviews how many bathroom amenities that I had that they were just like overwhelmed that it was so wonderful that I had so many options in case they forgot anything. Absolutely worth the money. And so, yeah, just reaching out. I'm in a bunch of Airbnb Facebook groups that are, yes, mostly complaining and horror guests fear-mongering, but sometimes you learn some stuff. So recommendations for what kind of sheets to use and towels and other stuff like that, so you don't have to keep rebuying them. Those things you can learn from other people's mistakes. I'm huge on that.
I love it. That's awesome. Well, Sarah, at this point in the show, I'd love to jump into our lightning round. This is where I ask my guests the same four questions each week. Are you ready?
Sure.
Awesome. Okay. Question number one is, what is one fun fact about you that not many people know?
I absolutely love the water, and my college friends used to call me fishy.
That's cute. Do you still have that nickname?
No, fortunately.
So just because you liked water, that was...
Yeah, I was a big swimmer. I've always loved the water.
Oh, awesome. Okay. Yeah. Very cool. All right. Well, question number two is, who inspires you the most and why?
All the people on the internet that are just trying to do their money better. And I realize that's a bit of a cop-out answer, but I have hundreds of thousands of people that I get to see win and post about their successes and that are just really working to pry themselves and their families out of a hole into a better financial position. And it is constantly inspiring. Every single time I see women comment saying that they're improving and they're so glad that they have, I just overfill with pride. So they're my constant inspiration.
I love that. Yeah, it's so, so true. And fortunately now, I feel like there is so much more content out there where if somebody really does want to learn something, they can, and they don't have to really Absolutely. Search and struggle for it. And chances are there's also someone who's been in similar shoes that has figured out a way to inspire them to do the same thing.
You can absolutely find a money guru on the internet that you can relate to and connect with, and you can feel kindred with their story. So it doesn't have to be me. It doesn't have to be Tori Dunlop or the Budgetnista or the Budget Mom.
Yeah.
All of these people are incredible, and they all provide super unique faces to this and different types of inspiration. And I think it's absolutely wonderful that we have this online personal finance community where you can go.
Yeah. No, so true. All right. Well, the third question is, what books are you reading now or have read that you loved and would recommend?
So my friend Miko, the Budget Mom, just came out with her book, Your Money, Your Way.
Yeah.
My Money, My Way. Sorry. And that I'm absolutely sure is fantastic. She's a paper planner person and has made an absolute empire off of that. I'm a digital spreadsheet girl, but we are both just trying to help women get their money right. So whatever way works for you, works for you. But she is a huge inspiration. Rachel Richards has a book called Passive Income, Aggressive Retirement. She is such a phenom. She's always made pretty much a normal person income, and she retired at 27, essentially buying homes in cheaper areas and renting them out. Now she makes $27,000 a month and is retired at 27. And she Amazing. Is just the cutest, sweetest person. And you can absolutely learn from her if you are interested in kind of getting out of the rat race a little bit early.
I love it. Love it. Well, the last question is, what is one actionable tip or piece of advice that you can tell our moms out there to help them on their financial independence journey?
Make budget. I know you're not happy about it, but make the budget, stick with it, and just keep improving. Financial mastery and learning about money is like a muscle. Just try to make it a little bit better every week. Learn something new that it'll either make you money or save you money, and just keep building upon that. So don't get frustrated when you look back a few years from now and you're doing so much better. It will seem like it was so easy.
No, Sarah, thank you for the wisdom and the wise words. How can my guests connect with you further? Because I know you have amazing content and I love following you. So how can my audience connect with you as well?
Thank you so much. So my main platform is YouTube. So youtube.com/budgetgirl. I have 7 years of videos of me dragging myself out of debt and then building myself up to this point where I'm doing so much better with money now. You can also find a ton of free resources at budgetgirl.com that is there for people to teach them how to raise themselves up and do better. There are free budgets and spreadsheets and printables and all sorts of stuff there. I don't charge for anything. And you can follow me on any social at GoBudgetGirl, except on TikTok. I'm just BudgetGirl there.
Awesome. All right, Sarah, thank you so much for coming on. It's been so much fun.
Thank you.
Alrighty, that wraps up another amazing episode of the Investor Mama podcast. I hope you enjoyed it. How cool is it what Sarah did with the short-term rentals? My mind was totally blown. I know I said this in the episode, but there's so many ways to get creative in real estate and creative on creating income. It's just awesome. And so if you are in a college town where football's big or anything that you like, really, if you wanted to go out and maybe go the schoolie route and get a bus or the RV route, which she did, and just get creative. But there are ways that you don't have to put a ton of money up front. Now, I know she put $15,000, which is not insignificant, but that's less than a lot of down payments on a house. So there's really cool ways to make money. I hope you're learning. I hope you're enjoying. And so if you did like today's episode and my other content, please subscribe on the platform that you are listening to. Also, leave a rating and written review. It really helps the providers know you're finding value with my content. And feel free to share on social as well. Anyone that you think would benefit from these episodes, definitely feel free to pass along. And if you do that, just shoot me an email with a picture, a screenshot, and I will send you a free calculator, because I really want to help as many moms, as many people as I can. And so the more people that listen to this, I hope just to have a bigger impact. So I hope you enjoyed. And this is Investor Mama. I'll see you next week.
Thanks for listening to the Investor Mama podcast. If you like today's episode, please support us by clicking subscribe on the platform you are currently listening to, leaving a comment or awesome review, and spreading the wealth and sharing this podcast with friends and family or on social media. Don't forget to check out investormama.com to connect with our community and sign up for our email. Stay tuned for next week's episode.